Hello, this is Michael Malver. For the next couple minutes, I would like to share with you an interview that I did with Dean Wilbur over the phone a couple days ago. Dean Wilbur is one of the founding members of VidPi, and so I started by asking him his recollections of how VidPi got started.
Well, I can't give you particulars because I've forgotten a good part of it, but I know initially we had a few sort of academic conferences involving blind programmers back in the middle to late 60s. Ted Sterling and Cy Pollock, then at University of Cincinnati, set up one. I think it was in Columbus, but I don't remember for certain where it was. And there were two basic schools at the time, one in Pittsburgh and one in Cincinnati, that were training people to be blind people to be programmers. And at one of those meetings, a number of us got together and discussed joining some sort of organization, joining together to try and further the, you know, educate the employers basically as to what was necessary as far as our being able to be employed and what we could do once we got there, kind of thing.
I asked Dean how he performed his job back in the days when VidPi was starting and what sorts of adaptive technology were available to assist him.
Everybody was working one job at a time on the computer. There was no multitasking or whatever. So whenever you ran a job, you keyed up your cards on a key punch machine and you took them over and read them into a card reader and ran it on the computer. And then you got your printout off of the printer, and you came back and debugged, because that's what you always did the first time out. And after a couple rounds of that, you ended up with your program doing what you wanted to do. But as I said, there was, you know, you had the whole machine to yourself at the time. There was no such thing as two or three different programs running at the same time. A fellow named of Steubing, Bill Steubing, I think it was, but I've forgotten his first name for sure. Steubing Automatic Machine Company, I think is what he ran at the time, built a device that was kind of a cross between a slide rule and an old braille slate that allowed you to take a punch card and stick it in this on this little flat table, and he had a slide that ran across it. And you could use a stylus and run up and down along this slide to see what holes were punched in the cards. And by doing that, moving from column to column to column across an 80-column card, you could read what you had punched into that card. You had to learn what all of the punch combinations were. That's what we did to read the input. Now, as far as reading output, somebody decided somewhere along, before I got there, back probably in 63 or 62, somewhere in that range, if they took a piece of garter elastic and stretched it across an impact printer, which is the type they used at the time, they could get the thing to emboss just a little bit. And what they then did was they wrote a program that used a bunch of periods and would generate braille cells. So you'd take your text and you'd generate a little braille array for each character and print those out. And if you had very good braille skills, you could read your output. The concept was to be totally independent, be able to go into a company and say, with this piece of elastic and this device I've got in my hand, I can do all of the necessary input and output to write programs for you.
Do you remember any specific efforts that BITS was involved in the early days to make computers more accessible for people?
There was a lot of push to certain companies in certain directions to try and get something for blind people to use. One of the earliest efforts, I think, was something called a Visitoner, which Kurzweil put out. Developed, I guess, for his daughter at the time, that used tones to be able to read what was being whatever characters were being transmitted. Telesensory Systems came out with a device that lets you read off of the screen and converted it to raised dots so that you could get the image of whatever characters were up there transmitted to what was basically a little finger-sized Braille apparatus, if you will. The only things I remember that we specifically did as students and as instructors of students to try and find ways to communicate with a computer. One was to use Morse code. I don't know if you are familiar with the computers, but they used to generate a lot of RF noise. So if you took your radio and tuned it off station, you could pick up a lot of tweets and whistles. And if you programmed the thing just right, you could probably generate a Morse code or some sort of code out of it. We tried to do that. In fact, a fellow named Guy Clausen, I know, I think actually wrote a program that did that.
Do you have any other last thoughts?
Well, other than the fact that I'm really tickled to see that, you know, Bits is still going, I'm not really that involved anymore. I've been out of it for a few years. But it's good to see it continue. I'm sure there are new challenges these days, but it's got to be much easier now that you can sit at your desk or you can just walk down the street with your iPhone and, you know, do the sort of things that used to take us literally weeks. It's amazing to me, and I just hope it continues. I'd like to see, you know, what things are going to look like in another 40 years. Well, enjoy your convention there, and I'm glad to see, like I said, that it's still going.
Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
Thank you.